Blog Talk Radio.
It's Monday night, and that means a brand new episode of Graphic Policy Radio, a show that mixes comics and politics. This is a show for folks that know a real superhero stands up and for and fights for what's right, especially equality for everyone, no matter their gender, age, race, or sexual orientation. So tonight we're mixing the depressing with the uplifting, too. First up, we're discussing a story you might have seen everywhere from Boing Boing to Daily Beast. Numerous sites have covered the threats, including death and rape, geared towards most recently Janelle Asselin for an article she wrote at Comic Book Resources where she dared to question a cover for the relaunching Teen Titans series that featured a teenage girl with rather unrealistic proportions. And that's putting it very nicely. And then after that, the uplifting part is we're going to be discussing about two series featuring kick-ass women. Lumberjane, which debuted last week from Boom Studios, their imprint Boombox, and Tomb Raider from Dark Horse based on the iconic video game series. And before we really get into it, as always, I am joined by Alana. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I'm glad we're taking this on today. After the horror, talking about what went down in the online comics community this week, Lumberjanes is the perfect anecdote to make you feel good about comics again. So,
yeah, that's kind of, part of the, we're going to get into this, part of it is I feel there's so much negative. You every so often have to point out positive stuff when folks are especially doing things right. And mm-hmm. Lumberjanes is such the right thing, and Tomb Raider itself. Lumberjanes especially shows diversity, but we'll get to it. It's a great series for folks who haven't checked it out, but it's getting praise, so that's a good thing. But let's start with the shit first, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just pull off the Band-Aid and just go from there. Man, I have to sum this up. This sucks. This is when summarizing sucks. all right, so Janelle is a friend of the site, and we're kind of actually pulled into ourselves because I provided some stats for her for this article running at Comic Book Resources. It came out on April 11th, 10 days ago. It caused a shitstorm in many, many ways, but the article is entitled Anatomy of a Bad Cover. She decides to look at DC's new Teen Titans number one. Ken Rocafort is the artist of the cover, and he does do some great art at times. It's just this one's an unfortunate miss, partially because you have Wonder Girl, who is a teenage girl with, as Janelle points out, breasts that are bigger than her head. If you actually do the measurements, it's kind of ridiculous for a teenage girl to have this proportions is obnoxious. Plus, in general, I hate the cover because it's boring and lifeless and has no excitement whatsoever. There's many reasons to hate this cover. And Ken Rocafort does some amazing stuff. On a positive for him, because I want to point out positive where there's negative. If you really want to check out, I think, some of his top work, check out Velocity, which came out from Top Cow many years ago. I think his style pulls the kinetic feel for that series so well. It's really, really cool. The women are much more proportioned correctly. Not to say they're realistic, but they're at least proportioned more correctly. But he's got very unique style, and there it works quite well. Here it's a massive miss. So she wrote this article. As expected, geekdom went completely apeshit, some people from it. They not only took to the comment section of the post to crap all over it at many times, missing the point of the article and ironically actually backing up the point of her article that you have a new series, you can make it more diverse. There was a Teen Titans TV show that was rather popular. Maybe you want to advertise and diversify and try to get some of those folks in when you are relaunching to help broaden your base. And then from there, at the same time, she was also running a questionnaire for an ongoing study she's been doing about harassment in comics, where she received death threats and rape threats, ironically backing up the fact that there is massive harassment in comics. making her point. So it's unfortunate, but good things have come out of it. Many, many sites have kind of rallied. People are at the point where the thing is enough, how do we fix this, where do we go from here? You know, folks need to stand up and call this out. So that's our first topic for the night. Your thoughts on it. I mean, I feel that's a good spot to go with.
Sure. Well, you know, I want to start by just saying how glad I am that Janelle did this analysis in the first place. I don't think there are nearly enough people who are doing enough close analysis. It's something I wish, if it was like, if I had more free time, I wish I was doing more close analysis of how sexism and bad storytelling and bad art, like, is manifest in comics, because I do think that the genre benefits from having close analysis, and I definitely, you know, the artist in question was very gracious and, you know, has been a gentleman in responding to stuff, but I also, you know, he hasn't said, like, oh, I see what her point is, but I do think in his mind he's hearing what her point is, and I think that we need to continue doing critiques and analysis like what Janelle did, and hers was particularly well written and argued from a, both a commercial and an artistic standpoint. So I think that, you know, when I first saw this piece, I was just so happy to hear someone explain, like, that's not how gravity works. And, you know, try to break stuff down for some artists about, you know, how objects exist in physical space. Because that's a challenge for people, apparently. But, you know, I mean, I wasn't surprised at the reaction. A lot of the coverage has been about how no one was surprised at the reaction she got, and about how that's the awful part, is that this sort of insane reaction is normal. And it's, I have not, you know, I don't spend too much time reading comment threads, because you would die if you did. But you never see anybody saying anything along the lines of, oh, now that you mention it, that response was probably overblown. Or, you know, there's never any sort of self-reflection that comes from people talking about, you know, why their reaction might have been inappropriate. I think that, you know, people just like to exert power in places where, because they don't see that they have power in other ways in their life, even though I'm sure they do. And they don't want to think or question anything. And this is like their toys for them. They probably feel like most – I feel stupid psychoanalyzing people who I don't know. But I can't help but wonder, like, why is this level of vitriol and woman hatred coming out there? Because we know in real life those dudes far too frightened to say something to her face. And we, you know, the kind of harassment that happens in conventions itself is very real, but there's a lot fewer people who do that kind of thing than the kind of people who leave anonymous. I mean, maybe all the anonymous commenters are one guy, but I doubt it.
Well, it's hacktivists. It's one person.
I'm sorry?
I said it's like hacktivists. It's one person.
It's just one person. Oh, my God, that'd be amazing. You know, like, I think it's like a weird compulsion. And it's because they think that everything should belong to them, you know? And I do think that they hate women. That's it. Like, and it's amazing to me. Like, how could you hate women? But that's very common in our culture. So there you have it. It's going to show itself in both comics, so the way it shows itself in the comics community, you know, it shows itself up in other communities as well. We're not unique in that.
Right.
I am curious, like, I know that female critics in other genres get tons of sexist comments. I wonder, though, if, like, the amount of this, like, if they get less rape threats and other kinds of criticism. I'm not really sure. I don't read sports blogs. I'm curious to see what level of vitriol women receive, you know, women sports writers get.
I know they get a lot.
People say, like, I've never seen anybody say, like, a rape threat, for example. And, Alyssa Rosenberg, whose work I adore, and she writes about TV and movies a lot in addition to comics, will get really sexist stuff posted, but I haven't seen – maybe the stuff she writes for just moderate themselves, but I've never seen anybody say, like, rape threats or, you know, I don't know. If somehow comics is worse than anything else, I don't really know. I don't really know if we can know, but we do know that it's completely unacceptable. And this is the kind of stuff that that is bad for the comics industry. So if you want there to be more comics, even shitty ones with horrible art, it's not in your interest to go around creating an environment where people think you're an asshole.
Amen. Well, so I want to kind of back up. You kind of said, like, you brought up the point that this isn't unique to comics, I mean, or geekdom in general, that this is an online issue. And so one thing I kept on thinking about on this is Dan Slott was, and I'm not saying this happens to everyone and going that bullshit route, because I'm going to actually hopefully make a decent point on this. So Dan Slott, when he did the Spider-Man thing, and he had Doc Ock become Spider-Man, we all knew Peter Parker would eventually come back. He got death threats over that. He got tons of death threats. And Dan, like, he put up for it. It like, seemed like he put up with it for a little bit, but eventually he's like, you know, enough is enough, and he started turning those into the police. So, you know, the threat part, death threat part, isn't unique to women. It's an online thing. The thing I always try to figure out is why these folks actually think they're anonymous and they can get away with it, and that maybe too few people actually follow up with it on those threats and turning them in. Like, what is this about the internet that people think this is okay?
Well, I've heard from folks who've tried to turn folks in that they had a really terrible time. You know, they were not their concerns were not taken seriously by the police. It's so funny. It was in a completely different other subject. A woman who I know professionally, who works with nonprofits but has a lot of connections with, like, you know, famous musicians. Like, somebody said or threatening her, demanding that they meet some of these famous musicians who she knows. And this woman reported it to the police that she was getting these threats, and the police and the woman threatened her and threatened her children. The police didn't take it seriously. So, you know, when people do take things to the police, they're not really acted on much. I definitely think it's worth taking it to the police, but I think that the fact that people have had bad experiences doing that plays into the fact that it doesn't stop.
It's definitely part of it. I mean, so I have dealt with death threats myself through the various, you know, what a shock, working in politics, various things, and some of it came from a different aspect of the geek community for a whole other thing that I don't want to get into. And the organization I was with, a whole bunch of people, staffers, got death threats about their kids and their home and a whole bunch of crap. And they did take that to the police, and thankfully the police did take it serious, and things were followed up on, as far as I know. But, like, it's amazing to me that, like, one, I feel you have to turn it in because, you know, knock on wood, God forbid something actually does happen.
Yeah.
You want the record somewhere that you went and did this, like, that you acted upon this, you tried to do what you can. Like, not following up on it, no matter how insane the person is, not, you know, how unlikely the person's going to do something, like, you never know. So to me, I feel like you have to do it just on the possibility something might happen.
You know, I mean, I'm sure that there are people who have had personally, like, horrible relationships with cops themselves, and so might not feel comfortable talking to the cops because of their own past histories. So I want to be sensitive to that. But if that's not you, then, there's no reason not to. But what's interesting is, like, the question that I think really developed through this particular bout is, you know, what responsibility do the sites have to moderate their comments more aggressively? And I do think that if a site wants to have a positive comment culture, they have to take action to moderating it. It's one thing if, like, a site that's just a labor of love, you know, where no one's making any money and that has no staff, can't really moderate itself that well. But
right.
These professional sites, these are part of, like, serious media operations. There needs to be a way for people to flag comment as abusive and have it toppled. I know that you can do that on the Mary Sue, for example. You know, you can flag something as inappropriate, and it gets addressed right away. There's no reason why the other site shouldn't have this. And CBR is notorious for having some of the worst sexist trolls in the comics world. Like, this is known to everyone. So if they cared, they could take action towards ameliorating that problem in their audience.
And this was a great point, and you nailed it, and something I wanted to bring up is, to me, partially sites are to blame for allowing this to occur and not stepping in. So I looked at the CBR post that Janelle put up and looked and read through all the comments. So those comments, there was like 500, and I can tell you right now, 558 of them or something like that by the time it was over. Yeah, sorry, 588 by the time it was over. 40 pages worth of comments. It went on for 3 fucking days. At no point did I see any CBR staff step in and say, this is totally unacceptable, knock it off, or we're shutting this down. There were some people that you know, fought and said, you're making your point. You guys are sexist. I'm not going to totally blame, like, all the CBR commenters. There were some that would stood up.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that some
and
people...
And great for
yeah,
them.
Yeah.
I, however, would say... CBR deserves to be slapped for allowing this to go on for 3 days, not stepping in. They clearly wanted the hits. Like, to me, this was clickbait at its worst from a site. The article's great.
You're right.
But to allow that bullshit to go on and those comments to go on for that long and not stepping in at any point, within the first day, people were posting and saying, this conversation has derailed, someone needs to step in and moderate and shut this down. And the site didn't do, 3 days later it did that. Like, this is supposed to be the site. CBR is the one that Marvel and DC and all those folks go to and kiss their ass. But this site showed such unprofessionalism in how they handled it. I'm ashamed that these guys are supposed to be like the top and pinnacle. I think they showed everything
you're
not supposed to do.
You know what? And I think we have to, like, name names, and I'm glad that we're talking specifically about CBR. And I think we have to say, like, that that's not a site that I can support. That's not I mean, to be honest, because I've known it's a horrible sexist commenter community, it's not a site I've really spent much time on anyway. But I'm especially going to say, no, I don't read CBR. I'm not a CBR reader. I don't read the New York Post either. I don't, you know, I don't watch Fox News. I don't read Stormwatch. I also don't read CBR because these are sites that generate hateful environments of people who hate people like me. So I don't want to spend time there, and they don't deserve my clicks. They don't deserve my attention, you know? And then, again, like, you know, other sites have had problems as well, but it's just so much worse there. It's interesting. I was just reading the Daily Beast article because Daily Beast is sort of like, it's not a comics-focused website, so I was curious what a non-comics-focused audience might say. Oh, my God, the comments are terrible. But
yeah, those comments went off the rail quickly.
They're like sexist and stupid and really stupid, as in the people who are writing them are really dumb, dumb as hell. But I haven't seen anybody write any threats in them or anything, you know. But that was just, it just shows you how consistently sexist people are in general. Even in Daily Beast, with its rather broad audience, including many dumb people, apparently, none of them felt the need to have rape threats.
Yeah, I mean, it blows my mind. Yeah, I mean, I have subjected myself to all the stupidity in the comments just because I felt like I need to. So here's...
Here's a
difference is Comics Alliance and Andy Corey, and I'm sure I'm butchering his last name, sorry. He wrote a fantastic article about the situation, and I think it was really well written. The thing I noticed on the Comics Alliance website is you have to log in with your Facebook account. So no anonymous accounts, like, you have to do that. There's no, like, Disqus, you can make a fake throwaway account, and Gawker uses that. But Comics Alliance, I noticed, was very unique in that you had to use Facebook. And Facebook, yes, you can make fake Facebook accounts, but it's kind of a pain in the ass to do.
Yeah, and it's really easy to get shut down.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, sites can easily stand up and do the right thing and moderate their comments. Like, there are tons of functions and plugins out there to handle the situation and deal with the situation. So, I mean, the fact that they're willing to write to supposedly champion the cause and have an article like that, which is great, but then at the same time allow vicious comments to go on in their threads unchecked or in general on the site, like, to me, it's bullshit. Like, it's clickbait. I mean, that article was clickbait. You know, looking at those comments, looking how he handled it, they don't believe in that issue. They wanted the hits.
Yeah.
And to me, that's
disgusting. God, it's totally true. They weren't there to support her writing and her analysis, which was really freaking good. They were just there because they thought they could drum up a lot of troglodytes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And guys, seriously, like, they're really making comics fans look like idiots. You know, every time I post articles about this to my Facebook, you know, where people who I'm friends with who aren't necessarily comics fans see it, it just makes the whole comic book community look really like troglodytes.
Yeah.
And I actually don't know if we're worse than anybody else. I do think that there perhaps are people who feel like more, that they're given more leeway because this is something that's recreational to them as opposed to being related to their job. I don't know. But it's so visible here. And they have like no compunction about it. I really want to know their names and faces, and I want to show it to their. I'm sure they don't have girlfriends and wives. I want to show it to their mom.
Yeah. I mean, that to me, that's the response. Would you talk to your mother like this? And if the answer is yes, then they have some serious issues. And I sent you on IM a link, Allison. Baker, who is one of the founders of Monkey Brain Comics, been in the industry for quite a while, also has an article on CBR. So again, you know, the whole double standard thing. So she wrote an article. So far, it's only got 12 comments. But at WonderCon this weekend, some asshats actually had a T-shirt that said, "I like fangirls. How I like my coffee. I hate coffee." Like. The fact that
Who said this?
It was a T-shirt that was on sale at WonderCon. And someone tweeted up a photo of it, and it says, "I don't understand why people say comics are hostile to female fans with rad shirts like this for sale at WonderCon." And it's a cup of coffee spilled with a sad face that says, "I like fangirls, how I like my coffee, I hate coffee."
Don't want to have any women in their lives at all. That's like, don't be my neighbor, don't be my coworker, don't be my girlfriend, don't be my cousin. Like, have nothing to do with me. There are no women in my life or my space. Is what they're saying there.
Yeah, it's so. I emailed you beforehand because I want to kind of get into like maybe some of these causes or like what the thought process is behind it. And I've had many conversations with my fiance, who is a very strong feminist, and it's one of the reasons I love her and I'm with her. So we're talking about it, in that fandom, there seems to be perception, and I've noticed this in some of the comments, that fandom is a zero-sum game. So in other words, if women gain, the guys lose. You know, if Wonder Girl's books are realistic, somehow I lose something out of my fandom. Another example of it, and
I totally think you're right, but just trending it. I also think it proves to them that you're right. They don't know how boobs work.
Yeah, well, so here's another example of it.
don't tell me how how boobs work.
At San Diego Comic-Con, there was a whole thing about Twilight fans when that was a huge thing, and there was tons of fans, and you can go into, like, hey, they were sucking up tickets. That's a fine, valid argument to make, whatever. Part of it was that zero sum is because Twilight's there, I'm losing something, which isn't true. Because those are there, that is another group of individuals that you should bring into your fandom. Like, who knows what else they might discover while they're there? How is this
exactly
a bad thing?
Right. Like, show them all that iVampire exists, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe there's some romance comics that they'd like. Like, this is a great opportunity to expand fandom. Yeah.
So
but they want to feel superior to somebody. They want to feel superior to somebody, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of where, like, everyone gains on in that terminology. But to me, it's just this really weird thought process and just this weird belief of, like, if something changes or this group comes in or there's more fans of this or someone's new to it, you also see it in sports when they all say, like, oh, Johnny come lately is a fan of this sports team, as if this is a bad thing. Like, I lose something because this person is new. Like NASCAR blew up, and the diehard NASCAR fans seem to kind of like not like necessarily the new NASCAR fans. Like, yeah. What is it about fandom that there's this weird perception that, you know, if someone gains, someone else loses, which it's just not the case, other than market share.
So,
publishers, someone gains, someone loses.
But the publishers should still grow their market share. So here's my theory.
Right.
Everyone in their life, just about, feels like at some point they've been excluded and that they were the outsider. And then they feel that they have to have this one place which is theirs, which they're special and which they are included in. And they either want to have the opportunity to do the horrible thing to others that was done to them, you know, or they so they can have that power trip themselves, or they want to have an opportunity to reject other people, you know. The desire to feel special is not universal, but it's an incredibly common human urge.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. That's actually a really good thing. That's a good way of looking at it. I can see that. Yeah, I can totally see that. Like, you know, I've suffered. I've been a long-time fan of this. This is what makes me unique. You've been there for 2 days. I'm no longer a special snowflake. No one's a special snowflake.
Yeah, but what's interesting is, like, I used to be frustrated by quote-unquote posers when I was, like, a teenager, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was a teenager. How old are you? part of growing up was deciding that posers were fine, you know? Maybe it'll be easier for me to find records I like at the local store if there's more people who, like, pretend to like the bands I like for whatever reason. I got over it. I don't know. Maybe all of these haters are actually 16 or younger.
That
it
is
seems
actually,
unlikely, but...
It's the poser mentality. Yeah, that's a very good call on that. That's a hell way to describe it. Yeah.
It's just, like, infantile. I do think that, you know, having people have to log in through Facebook or having some sort of authentication is going to be helpful towards maintaining people's behavior because, you know, I see people say sexist, assholic stuff on sites like Think Progress where you have to have a Facebook account, but nobody's threatening anybody. Nobody's – but I really do – when I see their comments, I just want to write back like, hi, I see where you work. How – you know, there's this, like, personal issue of, like, oh, I guess I don't want to go to the hospital that you're a nurse's assistant at because you're clearly a psycho sexist douchebag. But whenever I see people saying stuff that's just really, again, I haven't seen anybody doing that way with threats, and I think that's because their name and faces are there. But I do wonder about the sanity of people who say really mean and sexist things when I know full well who you are, where you work now.
Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Utter transparency of the internet.
I will say for the sites that do have the Facebook, I have seen people comment that and been like, do you realize this is public? Like, people, it's attached to you. People can see this. Like, I have seen those comments. So it's a step in the right direction, at least.
Yeah.
It's not a complete fix, but at least it kind of gets somewhere. It seems anonymity breeds this asshole nature.
It does. It feels an opportunity. They say something without any consequence because they wouldn't say it to her face, you know, not like that.
Yeah, there's going to be some consequences. I'm getting IP addresses, and we're going to have some fun with this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that they like the opportunity to be bullies, again, because they're small people.
Yeah.
But I think
that
what's really hard for us to know is, you know, what percentage of people feel this way? Is there, you know, mostly a silent majority of people who aren't stepping up to protect people but are not feeling, you know, they're also turned off by this sort of conduct? We don't know. I mean, that's why I think it's really important for us to be calling on other folks to stand up and establish community norms.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the actual people from the site and the moderators for the comments is your first line of defense, along with the other commenters themselves, need to step up and say this isn't acceptable. This isn't right, like, please knock it off. So this was another question, and Kaylin, my fiance, actually, we disagreed on this a little bit to some points. What do you do with these people? Do you sit there and you you comment on, you know, their idiocy and say this isn't right because of XYZ, do you delete it? Do you ban them? Do you do a mix of that? Like, what's – I'm a little mixed at times on what to do with that, so I'd actually love to hear your opinion.
Well, you know, the thing is, if these were, like, literally actually children, it would be a different story in terms of developing, helping people to learn and see things differently, but they're not. And this is not like, you know, the public roads or the internet existing period. This is a closed, this is a community. So I think they need to just be banned and kicked off and just get rid of them. They shouldn't be able to find any safeness. They shouldn't be able to have safety online. You know, well, maybe they'll start their own individual, you know, universe of hate tumblers. Let them, and they can fester amongst themselves in the corner. But it is important for the comics community to establish that they are outside of acceptable behavior.
Yeah. So,
you know, even if you could argue that, like, we live in a sexist world, so maybe most fans are somewhat sexist. Most fans are not great threat giving levels of sexist. We can establish that the people who are that abhorrent are not to be considered part of the community and ban them. That's fine. Just outright ban them. They know that they're saying is wrong. You're not going to change how they feel or how they process something by continuing to engage them in those conversations.
Yeah, so I think that's my general thought is like when it's rape threats and death threats, like one death threat should go to the police. I mean, that state of that
yeah.
one. But yeah, when it's like that extreme, you're not getting through to those folks. Ban them, get rid of them, block them, mark down their IP, don't let them get back. For the sexist comments, I feel like you have to engage and educate. Like it's not, you know, it crosses the line, and it makes people uncomfortable, but at the same time, like maybe there's hope to get them back. Like maybe they really are kids or just uneducated. I mean, I admit that sometimes I don't use the right language and stumble and say stupid shit, and like to be corrected and told why I'm wrong. Like this is a good thing. So like to me, there's a mix of it a little bit. Like you got to engage. You can't totally block because my fear is if you blocked everyone, no matter like what degree, that they would go to some corner of the universe of the internet and fester and get worse because now they're going to blame women for being blocked from their site.
Well, they're going to blame women for everything anyway. I mean, I'm not saying that like every time somebody says something which is sexist, which is probably stemming from them not knowing much, they should be banned. No.
Okay.
But I do think, because yeah, for the exact reason you said, like, you know, people didn't come out knowing everything. But I really think a lot of the time you can tell what someone's intention is. And, you know, I think this is why moderation of forums is important because it is a judgment call. Like there is too much sexist stuff that's allowed to stand that makes the general community seem hostile to women, which makes women not want to participate on those pages and not write for comics. And not write about them. And that's destructive in and of itself. So I think that there actually has to be community moderation beyond just the, like, you know, beyond just not having death threats and just not having rape threats. But you know, yeah, it's not like every time somebody says something that we disagree with, they should be banned. I do think that we should be organized to respond to, you know, women say, but don't women think blah, blah, you know, and it's like, no, they don't, and things like that. But it shouldn't always come down to women having to do it all ourselves all the time. And it's been good to see more men standing up and saying that we're not going to just leave this to you. And I understand that it's hard for guys because they're worried about, even because guys who are like good guys and aren't dicks, they don't want to say the wrong thing either. So they're actually putting themselves out there when they come to support us. But that's why I cut them slack when they do that.
You're one of the good ones because that, Andy Corey in the Comics Alliance article mentioned that was like men have to do this because if it's just women, then it becomes these assholes versus women when it's not the community versus these assholes. And it's interesting is that the thing I did notice in a few of the articles is that there were guys who would start off and be like, one guy actually said, like, I haven't noticed this. Where is this occurring? I don't want to go there. Like, that was a statement. To me, that's a valid comment. Like, where is this occurring? I haven't seen it. Like, maybe he hasn't, or maybe his eyes just, he hasn't noticed it. Like, to me, that's a valid thing.
And then when people told him, how did he respond to that, or was he,
So the problem is at that point is people kind of jumped down his throat, and there was a lot of negative comments about his comment being like, you're blind, you're a man, of course you don't notice these things. Where I took his initial comment like at face value, and he was being very honest of like, I haven't noticed this. And I don't read CBR's comments normally, so until I really dug into due to this, like, I didn't know that place is a complete cesspool of comments. You know, I tend to stick to the beat, and Heidi brings a pretty good hammer when it comes to dealing with this shit. You know, there were a few people who made those sort of things where they might have misstepped a little bit or didn't say quite the right thing. And people were just jumping down their throats. And I was like, whoa, like, I understand everyone's angry and worked up, and some people are more sensitive than others. But, like, there are people who aren't going to say the right things at time, but generally your hearts are in the right place. And those are the people we need to really educate.
Yeah, I think but dealing with people who are wrong, even if they're not, you know, loathsome human beings, they're just wrong, is very tiring and draining. So it's inevitably, you know, inevitably we're going to feel tired of explaining. And I do think that there just needs to be more repeat up the bat, like, hi, you don't know. Bam. And that's okay. But that's where you should listen to us. Like, I don't try to justify or explain, you know, I'm white. Like, I don't try to say, oh, I know when something's racist or not. I know I don't know. And that sort of, like, humility needs to be – people have to have this explained to them again. I do think that, like, somebody saying, oh, I haven't seen this happen before, that's not a comment that you ban, but that is a comment that you should respond to. Like, well, that's you probably haven't noticed this because you're a guy. Think about that. You know, I'm not angry. Like, I'm not, you know, would it be better if some people responded to that person politely? Sure, but I completely sympathize with the people who responded emotionally to him. It's really freaking draining having people question you all the time.
Yeah.
And again, that's why it's good to have multiple people responding, because, you know, for everybody who said to him, like, shut up, you're an idiot, there was probably someone like you who said, look, here's what she's talking about, this is what it means, you know, take women at their word, blah, right?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think we should criticize people who, you know, who get fed up with people who are just honestly wrong and not trying to be dicks, because it's tiring for us. You know, and if people are able to talk to them politely, then that's, you know, above and beyond the call of duty. That's great. But
sadly, this wasn't always polite. I could tell the frustration from the writing that they were doing, though.
Yeah.
So put on your poli-sci hat. I threw this out there in email. This is part of the discussion I've had, and I actually think this is a very valid thing, and I don't know how you study this, is part of this, you know, going into the zero-sum, some gain, some lose theory, you know, do you see some of this due to changes in society? Like, right now, women are making gains. I know there's a lot of talk about inequality and pay and all that, but Pew has done some studies. I've seen it quite a lot of other places that women are the split of jobs is women are making gains in education. I think it said more women are getting their degrees than men currently, and that's been a gain since the 90s. So there are some positive things in women as a whole. Is, like, do you think that insecurity and that, like, uneasiness of gender roles, like, exacerbates this in a way?
Yeah, I do think that this is a response to their anxiety. And their anxiety comes from their own failure. It doesn't necessarily come from our success. If they could see our success and not pretend that it meant that it was at a cost to them, then they wouldn't respond that way. But they feel threatened. And that definitely, I think, that exacerbates the response.
It's funny that I talked to Kaylin and I joked about that, and she's like, you know, it's nice that I myself, like, want her to succeed. And I joked with her. I was like, I totally want you to succeed. The more money you make, the less I have to work.
Yeah. Oh my God, you're talking about the Phyllis Schlafly thing. Oh my God, that was crazy.
I'm like, you gain, I gain. This is awesome. So stats for people who want.
Oh, it's absolutely true. Men benefit from feminism in huge ways, especially geek men. So, okay, men benefit from feminism in general because, one, it means that it doesn't all come down to them. They get to share the burden of the world with us. Two, it also means that they get to, like, have sex without having to rape people. That's good for everyone, too. Men benefit. I mean, you don't think men benefited from birth control? Of course, men benefited from having birth control. Like, but especially geek guys benefit from feminism because feminism opens up the diversity of gender presentation and ideas about what's masculine, what's feminine. You know, what can you do? And so many men in traditional geekdom were deviating from the stereotypical masculine norm. So us deconstructing that is great for you guys, right? So really, feminism is a geek guy's best friend if they can just get their heads around it.
Oh, I'm tweeting that one up.
I just realized that. I should probably tweet that.
Oh, it's coming. I wish I had the article in front of me. I thought about it earlier, and it was Fox was talking about their success in their show Sleepy Hollow, which was a very diverse cast. It's a good show. Yeah. So you had three African American leads or somewhat leads.
Mm-hmm.
The one white guy was the British dude from the Revolutionary War, so that one totally makes sense. You had John Cho in it.
Yeah.
I don't think a black guy from the Revolutionary War would make a whole lot of sense. I'm trying to think who else in there. I mean, it's a very, very diverse cast. So Fox has said since then that they have noticed that the more diverse their shows are, the better their shows do. And it started this whole conversation of just diversity you gain. Like, Fox has done really well with a lot of their series in the last 2 years or so. I mean, some of those series that were doing well because of diversity aren't doing as well, but I blame the writing on that and the jokes just being stale. But their initial thing, and one of the reasons you see so much diversity on Fox lately is because they figured out it's best for their bottom line. This is a good thing. Like, if people want comics to survive and grow and blossom, you want diversity. Like, you want more people buying. You want better choice. You want different characters that different people can relate to. White men don't do that. We've seen it elsewhere where it benefits. And as much as you argue that, it seems like people are like, nope, not true. I don't see it. Like, diversity doesn't help at all. Which just confounds me. Like, there is evidence. We see this. There is hard numbers that show this.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
It's their bigotry that means they don't see it. It's because they're bigoted.
Yeah, I mean, it also, I think, comes down to that zero sum to some extent of the...
Uh-huh.
If it becomes more diverse, there's less folks that I'm into. Like, I won't see Batman in 6 titles. You'll only get 2 titles. Like, no, you still get Batman in your 2 titles, and they're going to be 2 kick-ass titles, and DC's going to pay a lot of attention to it. They're just going to have 4 other titles that other people can enjoy, and maybe you can enjoy too, because they'll hopefully be good, well-written.
Exactly.
It seems like out of all the comics, the ones that really publishers are really getting, Boom, which we're going to talk about, their Lumberjanes, clearly gets it. Marvel, with their all-new Marvel Now, seem to really, really get it. IDW has kind of diversified a bit. You see it slowly, and there's got to be some success there if these companies are doing that. So, the change is coming, and the change is here, and get freaking used to it, people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the stats. I feel like I kind of want to throw out those stats from the pew, just so people know. So hard stats everyone can go back to and think about. In 2010, women made up almost half of the labor force, 46.7%. In 1997, women made up 46.2%. Back in 1970, they made up 38.1% of the force. So this is a good thing. And then on the education front, some 44% of women ages 18 to 24 are enrolled in college or graduate programs as of October 2010, compared with just 38% of men in the same group. And then in addition, 36% of women ages 25 to 29 had a bachelor's degree, compared with only 28% of men in the same group, a record high divergence. Women first surpassed men in those realms in the early 1990s, and the gap has been growing wider ever since. So this isn't a thing that's coming, folks. This is a thing that's here. You've been living in this world. You just haven't noticed it.
I think they have. I mean, that's all part of
it. Or maybe that's why they're raging.
Yeah, exactly. They don't understand, like, this is in the end. This is good for them. They can only view themselves as losing because they're losers, I'm guessing. So.
Yeah, I don't get it. I
do think that, you know, it's been good to see so many comics people talking about this seriously. And not just saying, oh, do we have to talk about this again? And saying, no, we're going to talk about this again because we have to keep talking about this.
Yeah, it's a serious issue. It's a it's important. It's here. Like, death threats and rape threats, like, I've been on the receiving end of death threats. They're not fun. They make you unnerved.
Yeah.
You get a little freaked out about it, no matter how unrealistic it is. I used to get it working on the Hill all the time from nutcases. It's just part of working on the Hill. You shouldn't have to live. Yeah. I got some great stories in that department. remind me to tell the story about when I got the third floor of the Russell Senate office building shut down.
Jesus.
That'll be a story for another story, or for another show.
Yeah.
No one should go through it. It's just not acceptable in any sense. Like, I can understand a joke that just completely tanks, but these aren't jokes. This isn't funny. It's unacceptable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Enough on that. Positive stuff now?
Yes.
All right. Well, I need to bring up the site because I wasn't bright enough to bring up who is writing what so I can give them credit. But while I'm doing that, so there's a new series. I asked you to read it, and you seemed to get really excited about it, just like I got excited about it. The series is Lumberjanes from Boombox, which is an imprint of Boom Studios. And another book Boombox is doing is called The Midas Flesh, which I really should give you to read because that's just as awesome. And I'll describe Midas Flesh really quick. So it's a story of three individuals, sci-fi world. They're going to go get an ultimate weapon to defeat the Federation. The three characters are an anthropomorphic dinosaur is one. The leader of the ship is a woman. And then their other person who I guess is the gunner or is the pilot is another woman who wears a headscarf. Is that a hijab?
Well, it depends which kind. I look at the picture. There's different kinds of different names.
Yeah, it's like the one that just wraps
probably
around the head.
Probably a job.
So that's the third. So, again, a series full of diversity. Holy crap. And it's awesome. So the other series, Lumberjanes. I'm going to try my best to describe it. There's only been one issue. It came out last week. It has sold like gangbusters. It's been a hit. Boom is doing some great stuff with it. The series is about five girls at a summer camp. The girls are diverse in their shape and their race and their look. It's great. And the best way I can describe it is I think it's a cross between Buffy and Scooby-Doo a bit. They're like five butt-kicking teenage girls who are solving some sort of mystery, and right now we know it involves three-eyed wolves or something and sneaking out, apparently. So the series is written by Grace Ellis and Noelle Stevenson and artist Brooke Allen, who I actually got a chance to interview at AwesomeCon this past weekend. So there will be an interview up with Brooke relatively soon, and I'm pretty sure I have a Women of Boom for all three of them on Graphic Policy, so if you do a search for their name or Women of Boom, you can learn more about them and then Boom and its awesome diverse staff. So your thoughts of the series?
It is so much fun and so creative. I think this is a great comic for kids, for adults. I don't quite know like what the right, you know, what's how young it would go. I'd like to know what they suggest. But this is a fantastic all ages book. It really throws you in the middle of the action in a way that you can't help but want to see what comes next. And the characters are a lot of fun. Great representation of different female personalities, and nobody looks the same. Nobody's built the same. You know, I always complain about comics; everyone has the same face. The style of the art is very cartoony, and even with that, they still are able to have represent diversity. It's awesome, and the fact that this is this like team-written book by a crew of really smart ladies is awesome. It really makes a big difference in how the story comes across, and it's the kind of comic that I think we need a lot more of to grow the, you know, to grow the industry. And it's also, as a piece of art, just a heck of a lot of fun. To me, not only did it remind me of like Buffy Scooby-Doo, but it also really reminded me of Gravity Falls, but it might have just been sort of the Pacific Northwest sort of setting. Maybe it's not Pacific Northwest. Maybe I'm just associating campgrounds with the Pacific Northwest for some reason. But I would actually say anybody who's a fan of the Gravity Falls TV show would definitely get a kick out of this comic as well.
That's why you brought up Gravity Falls. It did not click to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Gravity Falls.
Was that the one about Niagara Falls or no? That's Wonder Falls.
No. I describe it as being like Twin Peaks for kids.
Okay. Fair enough.
Which I know you're like, ooh, but trust me, it's like Twin Peaks for kids.
I will have to check it out. Yeah, I mean, I liked it. Like, it was my only issue was the issue was actually too short. Like, I wanted to see more and find out what this was about, and that was that's the worst thing. Like, it was actually I wanted to read more. Like, how is this a bad thing? But yeah, like, to me, wonderful first issue. It was diverse. It was fun and entertaining. Like, we need more of this, basically. Like, this is the prime example of awesome comics.
Yeah. I'm excited that they got, you know, these are, I think they're all, well, I know that Ginger Hazing has been doing some stuff for a while, but some of the other folks involved just seem to be pretty new to the field, right?
Yeah, so Brooke Allen, who is the one I interviewed, I actually know her from a series that she did, and not even a series, a graphic novel she did for NBM called A Home for Mr. Easter, which was her first thing that she ever did, and this is, I think, her first like real series, you know, an ongoing series or mini-series that she's been doing. I gotta go listen to the audio again to remember, because I know I asked her that question. So she's relatively new, and she's also a local person. She's a DC person.
Neat.
So, you know, little props on that. But yeah, I see her at cons like all the time. Really, really cool person. She said like she's been getting great feedback. Like, people love the comic. Kids have been coming up saying how much they love it. Adults have been coming up how much they love it. Like, that's, I think she said that was the thing that really has surprised her, is that it's been very as far as the crowd like praising it, so it's great. Like, it feels like an all ages title, and clearly it's hitting as an all ages title. And I saw it there at AwesomeCon this weekend too. That you know, there was tons of people of different ages around her and the other people who were at the table who did Adventure Time and some of the other comics. Very diverse. So,
fans of Adventure Time should also check out this comic. I think it has a similar kind of manic energy, fantasy, and believable young characters.
The look a little bit, too. Like, it reminds me of Bravest Warriors Adventure Time, like that cartoon. It's a cool style. I dig it. Like, it works really, really well. I just want more. That's the thing that kills me. I want more. There's only one issue.
Well, I mean, it's exciting to see all the fan art already. That's always a good sign for a series.
I totally missed that. Oh, that's great to hear.
Yeah, I've seen it on Tumblr and around and stuff like that.
Cool. Yeah, I was looking for maybe some cosplay this weekend of some of the characters, but that hasn't hit yet, so it'll be interesting.
The next one there will be.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that San Diego, you'll probably see a bunch of Lumberjanes cosplay. I guarantee that. This is like ripe for folks dressing up.
Mm-hmm.
But they look so
definitely normal
too. Is anyone going to notice it?
I know. You'd have to like really play it up because it's like pretty believable normal person clothes. But iconic enough, I think you could make it work.
Yes. Yes.
Speaking of iconic.
Yes.
But everybody should go and get Lumberjanes right now. Buy it for the kid in your life and buy it for yourself. And support having more awesome comics by women in the industry. And this is a creator-owned title, so, right?
Yeah.
Is Boom creator-owned?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Boombox
people
is,
do it.
Yeah, Boombox is kind of a more creator-owned, different style. Like, the imprint's made for these type of books.
So
folks who...
More reason.
Yeah, so for folks who don't know where to go, comic book shop locator will put in your zip. You'll find a comic book shop near you. If the shops are sold out, I definitely think you should call because there's a good chance of that. You can always go on many of the digital services. Comixology is probably the most prolific service. They'll have it always digitally, so you can take it with you on your iPad, Kindle, whatever. So you have no excuse if it's sold out. You can get it. But speaking of iconic, that was a nice...
Speaking of iconic, my
Tomb Raider.
Surprise of the week, Tomb Raider.
Yes.
So we reviewed the first issue of Tomb Raider, and we both sort of concluded, well, at least I concluded, that I like it. I was surprised. Didn't quite... obviously, people know I'm a fan of Gail Smith. I'm sorry, I act like an idiot. I'm a big fan of Gail Simone, but I'm not a fan who's like, oh, I love everything she does. But I didn't necessarily know that I'd like this particular book because I don't really care about the video game and there wasn't anything in particular about the character that I was interested in. And I don't really necessarily love all branded content stuff, right? Well, but I really enjoyed the first issue. And then I went and I just read issue 2 and 3 and it's really good. It is a strong comic. I always laugh whenever people say that it's great for these video games to make comic books based on them because, then people will get into, the comics readers will get into the video game. And it's like, I think it's probably going to work the other way around. I don't know how many people are not aware of the existence of Tomb Raider. I still don't feel like I'm any likelier to pick up the game because I don't play games like that. But I knew very little about Tomb Raider. All I knew was the weird jiggle physics of the animation, but I'm definitely interested in this comic. I found it to be suspenseful when it's supposed to be suspenseful in ways that not a lot of comics pull off successfully. It really has a lot of edge of your seat stuff, and it's eerie when it's supposed to be eerie. Again, this is, I think a lot of comics, we say, oh, it's edge of your seat, or oh, it's scary, and it's not really, you don't really necessarily feel that inside of yourself. You just sort of see these signals that are supposed to indicate that you're supposed to feel that way, and so you say it. That's not true here. This is an exciting comic, and I'm really impressed. I think it's the best thing she's writing right now, actually. And I do think that there's something to it that reminds me of True Detective, even though we now know the end of True Detective, but I'm not going to spoil it. Perhaps there's less in common between the two than I may have thought initially, but I still think that there's something of True Detective in it. I also just added bonus, but not a surprise at all, because it's by Gail, really good diversity in the cast. And not just diversity, but diversity with a cultural sensitivity, and not stereotypical diversity, and just really great at that. That is sort of trademark Gail being awesome things to do. But beyond that, it's a good comic book. You should read Tomb Raider even if you don't like the video game or know the video game or care about the video game. It's a good comic.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, so
and
I was kind of...
I never thought I'd be saying that. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, me too. Really me too. I was a little bit more down on the first issue than you, where I thought it was good, but it didn't completely blow me away. Partially, my issue with it was the video game is so much action-based and fluid and all that. I thought the first issue kind of missed it a little bit. But that's an issue going from a interactive entertainment to, you know, a page. Like, that's something you're going to deal with. So it didn't shock me that it felt that way. However, the second and third issue, like, really started getting to more of that kinetic feel and that action that I think I was missing in the first issue. And it's getting me, like, really into it. I'm like, at a point where I'm digging where it's going. I think the action's great. The story is really solid so far. And I want to see what happens next. Like, it really, you know what it reminds me of? Like, is a good Indiana Jones story with, like, the cult that's trying to end the world type of stuff. Like, it works really well. It is working really well. I went from the iffy to the hell's yeah department pretty quickly. Which is good.
Yeah.
That's what I was expecting.
Yeah.
That's what I was hoping for.
I really thought it would be sort of like workmanlike. You know what I mean? I was sure it wouldn't be bad because she doesn't really ever do anything bad. But I thought it would just sort of be like, okay, this is an acceptable comic, you know. But it's been a really pleasant surprise. I'm definitely endorsing it. People should be checking out Tomb Raider if they're interested in that kind of a story. And if they want another cool, diverse comics cast with a strong female lead.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, you've got Laura Croft as the main character, her best friend, female. One of the main guys is, what, British? There was the guy who was Hawaiian or Pacific Islander?
Samoan.
Samoan, that was...
No, Maori. I'm sorry, he's Maori.
Okay. Yes, woman. Black female with her daughter. So I'm guessing a single mom. There have been...
You're totally breaking up.
Sorry.
But yeah, like there's definitely like, yeah, there's a mom, the kid, but you know, there's a former cop and there's, yeah, it's like a well-rounded, diverse cast. It includes adults and younger people and people from different countries and cultures.
Yep. It's solid. Like, it's really good. I'm impressed where it's gone from where it began. So... mad props to her. Like, it, I think it was a slow start, but second and third issue really picked it up, and it's going well so far. Like, it's one I'm looking forward to reading the next issue. And I think last week was the third issues where it came out. Pretty sure.
Yeah. Folks should definitely check it out.
Yes.
Oh, it's Dark Horse? No, it's Dynamite. No.
Dark Horse.
Oh, Dark Horse. Okay, great.
Pretty sure Dark Horse. I hope it's Dark Horse. Otherwise, I tweeted wrong. Yep. It's weird in that they actually send stuff out like 2 weeks.
You're totally cutting out.
Ah. Am I better now? No. Maybe not.
Weird. You're back.
Okay, I'm back. I don't know, that's a little weird. You have no excuse as to why you don't check it out, because it's not out yet. So go get it this Wednesday. Yeah. Haha. We're ahead of something. So the final thing I kind of want to wrap up and kind of adding into a positive note as well is this past weekend was AwesomeCon, which is in the second year here in D.C. Some issues in that they had way more people show up than they expected. Literally 15,000 people descended on the ticket booth at once. For some reason, they didn't show up when it opened. They decided to wait a couple hours until, like, noon. So that aside, I will say the things that I noticed from the show was when it comes to attendance, it felt like it was 50-50. This isn't only my observation. Other people have commented it as well. When it comes to men and women, like, it was diverse. Just in general, the folks were diverse like you would expect in D.C. The next was cosplay. I'm not the only one to say this, but I actually think women were the majority cosplayers at the show. Tons of outfits, amazing. So that actually page Graphic Policy, snapped a lot of photos. My fiance was there to also snap photos. She was taking tons of photos of kids. There was tons of kids in costume, and we're not talking just boys, little girls too. Really, there's one photo of two adorable girls in Star Trek outfits that was awesome. But the thing that really, really stood out to me was the show had a kids section run by NASA. Like, literally NASA was at the kids section doing hands-on
nice
stuff, teaching them, showing things off. It was manned by women that work for NASA. Teaching all these kids, and there's a photo that announces, you know, women behind teaching. But what's great is it's all little girls. There's one little boy. There's like seven kids, one little boy, six girls at this table checking out science. It was
awesome
to see. Yeah, it's one of those things that you walked around, and when you really noticed it, like, it made me feel so happy and so good. It was fantastic to see. At the show. So, like, mad props to the show for getting families there. And the one photo I really want to point out, my favorite cosplay of the show, I'm sorry, everyone else, there was a family of a husband, wife, and their daughter cosplaying as the main characters from Saga.
Nice!
It was...
Oh, I successfully
awesome.
Got my dad into Saga, by the way. Remember, I was trying Woo-hoo! To figure out what was the right graphic novel for my dad? He really liked Saga. Went ahead and he ordered himself a second trade paperback.
That is fantastic. Yeah, it's a great series, but this family was like, husband had the horns, wife actually really looked like the main character. I can't, totally blanking on her name. And the best is
Alana.
They just had their Alana.
Her name
there
is
we go.
Almost the same as mine.
I haven't read an issue in such a long time. Like, I'm totally blanking.
I know. We want the new one to come out.
Oh, and then maybe, like, 4 or 5-ish, if that, with, like, tiny little horns on her head. It was so cute, so adorable to see this family cosplaying as these characters. It was awesome. Like, I can't praise it enough. The NASA folks, you did an awesome job. Like, when I do post, I'm making sure to praise them. The fact that they were teaching kids science and embracing science, and the convention was embracing science. You'll actually appreciate it. There was a table for
Oh, no, I'm not hearing you at all now.
Ah, can you hear me? No, yes,
yes.
Please? There we go.
Yes.
So the Secular Coalition was at the show. I feel like this is something that can only happen in D.C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, yeah, so... overall, it was great. Like, fantastic show. Mad props to them. Tons of diversity. It's exactly what you want to see. I think that wraps up everything. We covered everything we wanted
uh-huh.
to discuss, right?
Yep.
Okay. Great. So we get to end on a positive note. So that wraps up another episode of Graphic Policy Radio. You can catch us every single day at graphicpolicy.com. You can catch us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Pinterest. I'm actually start using our Pinterest account again. It's all at Graphic Policy. We keep it. Please join us and contribute. We've got some great new writers. I feel like this episode has just been filled with lessons, so I'm not giving another one. There's no reason to wrap up.
Sounds good to me. And in case folks didn't hear it again, that on Twitter we're at Graphic Policy.
Yes.
That's our handle. So tweet at us there.
Yes, and we'll
and the URL is for the site is graphicpolicy.com. We're easy to find.
Yep, absolutely.
See you next week.